You are listening to the Experience Points podcast for the week of December 20th, 2017, and you've listened to the Gamies. Now it's time for the Goaties.
Welcome back to the Experience Points podcast. I'm George Albor.
My name is Scott Juster.
We're the co-creators of ExperiencePoints.net, a site dedicated to the serious but not humorous conversation about video games.
Yes.
A whole lot of them this year.
The pinnacle of video games.
The pinnacle of video. That's true. We have reached the summit of 2017. Last week we did our Gamies.
Yep, the most important award show.
Best waifus were awarded.
Damn Japan.
Damn Japan Awards, the WTF Awards. We lavished praise on a slew of games.
Yep.
But at long last, we've come to the time of the year where we talk about our favorite games, the best games, the games of the year.
Our top games of the year.
Now, every year we have to make a caveat
that,
you know, it's okay if you like a different game, you know? There's plenty of games to love this year.
Unless that game is The Witcher.
Unless that game is The Witcher. You're not allowed to like that.
Yeah.
So keep that in mind.
Yeah.
These are our lists. We don't play all of the video games.
Speak for yourself.
There's a lot of, actually, a ton of little indie games that I didn't check out this year that I had meant to.
There's full-on AAA video games that I didn't even touch yet this year.
And we will get to that, actually, next week when we do the leftovers of 2017, when we stuff our face full of all of those Christmassy goodness. Yeah. But this year, it's time for the Goaties once again.
So we do this by each of us picks three.
Correct.
And we talk about why they're our favorites.
And neither Scott nor I know what our respective lists are.
No.
Now, every year I like to try to guess ahead of time what I think Scott's list is.
Yes.
In fact, I'm going to write it down right now.
Yeah. We're going to fold up this piece of paper.
Okay.
Hold on. I'll try to guess yours.
I remember thinking this last night. I was like, well, he could do this. Oh, but maybe he'll do this.
Yep.
No, I think he's going to do this. So I think I've got your list hammered down.
Yeah.
And I think that this year we will have no more than two crossovers. Maybe one crossover.
I think we'll have... Yes, I agree. I think my prediction is that we will have one crossover. And I think this is probably the most predictable year for me.
Oh, really? Okay.
For my picks. I think
like
anyone...
Yours were slotted in. You made this decision weeks ago.
Well, for the most part. There was definitely one that went back and forth. But like I feel like for anyone who's listened for a while, they could probably nail my picks.
Okay.
Yours,
I have been listening for a little while.
Yeah.
And I probably will mess up. But
I mean, I think yours are, for me, I think I know two.
Okay.
But then there's like a third... Wild card. The fucking wild card.
I will say,
Well,
we'll get into it a little bit, but one...
How was the deliberations?
It was tough.
Yeah.
Because, and I'll talk more about it as we climb the list as well.
Yeah.
Because there were some, like, there's a game that's high on my list that I almost didn't have on my list at all.
Mm.
Because I had gone into my selection with a certain, like, I need to go with this gut. It's like just the game that I'm just like most joyful about.
Mm.
And then I started thinking back about how I normally make my picks, right? Mm. Like every year when we get to this question of what is my game of the year, part of me does select the games that I just really enjoyed and created this sort of gut reaction in me. And then another part of me are the ones that I want to hold up as these symbols of like the wonder that games can bring and bring that back to me and almost like if I were to select a handful of games for someone to play so that they could be inspired to make their own games, you know? And so that changed how I was thinking about my list. Things went off. Things came back on. Honestly, some of the conversation about these games changed it. So
that's kind of what happened to me too. The one slot definitely came in pretty hot and it was impacted a lot by the various discussions that we've had.
So... Without further ado, should we get into it?
Let's
do you want to start or should I?
I can start.
Okay. Your number three game of the
year. Number three game of the year is Nier Automata.
Oh, okay, okay. Well, I can tell you right now, I'm already wrong.
Yeah.
Because I thought that was going to be your number two game.
Okay, okay, okay. But it was on the list.
It was on the list. It was on my list, yeah.
I never quite realized how beautiful this world is.
I mean, we talked a lot about Nier pretty recently because we just did a debrief on it. Mm-hmm. I went back and forth on this a lot, but it came down to thinking back to times when I was playing Nier when I was just laughing and shaking my head.
Yeah.
Where it's like, God damn it. This is...
What are you doing, Nier?
This is an accomplishment. Mm-hmm. I don't agree with everything that's happening in here, but in the year 2017, it is incredible that this game... which feels like a PlayStation 1 game,
yeah,
up-resed,
yeah,
can exist.
That's a really interesting way of thinking about it, actually, because it does feel a little bit... I think that does resonate with me.
It's just weird, and it's the controls are... I mean, how you interact with the game is unique. The graphics are kind of ugly, but almost in a brutalistic, meaningful way. It's just... there's just a lot of... there's a lot of unique things about that game.
I can name quite a few games this year that are deceptive in the way that they present themselves, and then they turn into something else, right?
Yeah.
I recently mentioned Doki Doki Literature Club.
Yes. Yeah.
But I was also reading a game about... it's an indie game about a 90... like, it's basically an indie game about sneaking into your parents' room to go on the computer to look at pornography in the 90s when
classic.
They left the house.
So it's like biography.
Yeah, so basically it's like an ASCII porno game that is actually a horror game.
Okay.
And that level of like, we're going to pretend to be one thing and then actually be another is pretty neat.
Yeah.
And Nier does that cool. at a level and a scale that is pretty mind-boggling.
Yes.
And it does it over and over and over again throughout the very last... hours of the game.
I mean, that's the thing where this game, so much of the unique content in this game is locked behind 20 hours of stuff that at times is highly repetitive. But even that repetition has meaning about what the game is about, and that combined with, once you kind of get into it, the actual elegance of the mechanics and the elegance of the stat system and how it all works together, I didn't expect to like this game other than a spectacle for how weird it was.
Mm-hmm.
But then I realized, oh, wow, this game has an earnestness that I didn't assume it would have going in.
Yeah.
I thought this was going to be like, oh, wacky anime game.
Yeah.
And it is a wacky anime game.
Yeah, for sure.
But there's more to it than I think the discourse allows for on the internet.
Especially for people avoiding spoilers.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, and which I did, and so all I could hear about was, oh, this game is crazy, and 2B is waifu of the year.
Yeah.
And while all that stuff is kind of true and it is a very anime ass game, it's not in the way that you would be like put off by it if you're not just into anime.
Yeah. I was reading an interview in Game Informer with Yoko Taro.
Oh, man.
The Taro. Taro?
Yeah, Taro. Yeah.
The creative mind behind Nier Automata.
The creative maniac and behind the Nier series.
Yeah, I was reading the interview and I was like, I think Nier's going to be in Scott's list. I want to remember this anecdote. And so it's an interview with him about how he writes the story. And it was saying, they were asking him how he writes about those really emotional scenes.
Mm-hmm.
And Taro says... I tend to get a lot more drunk than I think most writers do. And sometimes when I'm drunk, like, I'm writing a story and I'm crying at what's happening. And so I know I'm like drunk and sad and crying. And I know that that's going to work for people. It's just like, oh my God. And it was to a point too where I'm like, I'm a little bit genuinely concerned for this guy.
Yes. Yeah.
Because like, if he makes another game like Nier where he's just drinking a lot and, you know, we joke about Kojima being this like very well-known auteur, and you know, Kojima comes out on stage and the dude's, he's a good-looking guy in like expensive glasses, and he hangs out with Mads Mikkelsen, and Taro comes on stage and is hiding his face behind a weird moon mask, and like they are both auteurs, or you know, you look at David Cage, right, where that he has his own egotism and arrogance in the things that he does, despite our, you know, apologetic tone with him.
Yeah.
he definitely comes off as an asshole and an out of touch one to a lot of people.
Yeah.
And I think it's an interesting juxtaposition between these people who are now all undoubtedly auteurs and really forge a daring path with their games.
Yeah.
And just Taro is just a completely different beast than those others, you know?
It feels like there's still some danger there where, oh, this guy could get fired at any time.
Totally.
Whereas Kojima...
Or he could cross a line. Like, exactly. He might make a decision where it's like 40 hours into the game, he says something really offensive.
Or... Yeah, exactly. Yeah, to the player too, where it's like, oh, okay, with you until... Like, he just skirts the line of... disrespecting the player.
Like, if you were playing Nier and 40 hours in, he just deletes your save file without asking. Like, people would be pissed. But that is something that I would believe he would do.
Yeah.
If he felt it genuinely hit home his message.
Yeah. And so he's on the kind of... I mean, you know, to be fair, Kojima and Cage, all of those folks, there is a certain rebelliousness and danger to their work. But there is a... There's almost a weird desperation to his work that makes it feel even more dangerous.
Totally.
And the game is just really elegant, and it doesn't get to these parts until very far in, but it tells the story in a way that only video games can tell it. Like the interactivity of the medium is integral in communicating the story of Nier Automata, and I would recommend it to anyone, but you have to have the stamina to do it. And I don't blame you if you don't want to play it.
absolutely. Yeah, I'm glad that's on your list. Yeah. It's not on my list.
Oh, no.
Nier's not on my list. It'd be in the probably top five. Yeah. Certainly top 10.
Yeah. We'll talk about it during Leftovers.
Yeah, definitely.
So I want to hear why it didn't make it.
My number three game, and this might be a running theme, but I'm cheating a little bit here.
Okay.
My number three game is PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds.
Check. I had that
Did
on my
you?
List.
Oh,
for you.
Nice. Yeah. Good call. Yeah. This is a game... Okay, I'm going to talk a little bit about what PUBG is not.
Is it not officially
out?
It's
not even officially out. And that's why I'm cheating. It's not officially out.
I mean, this year, I feel like, is the tipping point for how we even define games as released.
I mean, PUBG is fucking out.
Largely because of PUBG.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah.
It came out on Xbox recently, but even that was like an early access.
Yeah, it's like an early access. I also heard it's pretty rough on Xbox.
Yes. Yes, indeed. And so, to that end, right... PUBG is not a perfect game.
Yeah.
It does not run smoothly.
Yeah.
It's not played best at ultra settings. It does not have a community that is welcoming or kind in any way, shape, or form. It does not have a development team that is active enough to make quick, efficient fixes to the game, let alone address some of those community needs.
Yeah.
All that being said, though, PUBG this year has produced some of the most exhilarating, cinematic... only in games experiences that I've had in games in a very long time, and especially multiplayer games.
Yeah.
Like, quick example. Last night I was playing PUBG, and this experience, by the way, solidified PUBG in my list.
You're like,
even
lock
up to
it
last
in.
Night, I'm
lock
like,
it in.
Maybe if I have a bad experience tonight, like, you'll go off my list, right? So I'm playing PUBG, and we drop in this location that is so far... off the map. This is in the new desert map.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm like, it's fine. We'll just get a boat. No boats. We have to walk like 10 minutes across desert. We almost get shot like twice, and we're just jumping out windows. We steal a truck, and then the truck starts being chased by these guys on a motorcycle. We literally have like pistols, and they've got submachine guns, and they chase us for nearly 5 minutes to a point where our car is running out of gas.
Five minutes is a long time to be chased.
Yes, to be chased.
Yeah.
And we're going over rocky desert hills, and we see like a little, like a Puebla out of like a Kurosawa movie, right? Or like a small like western town.
Yeah.
And our truck is running out of gas, so we're literally just like coasting down the hill, and we're like, I don't know what we're gonna do. They're gonna kill us.
Yeah.
And right then they decide to turn, and so they leave and abandon us. And I've got garbage weapons because they've wasted so much time chasing us, and they don't know we're running out of gas.
Yeah.
All that is to say, I last until the top five with like a pistol and one of the worst games and guns in the fucking game because I got lucky and it was dumb and then I died in just some stupid way.
And you're just living your life out in this small village.
In this small village, trying.
I gave up the game.
Trying to find a Senorita, you know. It was amazing, and I can find all of these little moments from this past year where, like, if I showed you footage from that mm-hmm. and Sylvester Stallone was in it, you'd be like, yeah, that's...
It's an action movie.
It's an action film. Yeah.
I remember just the conversation that this game engendered throughout the year is what's impressive to me.
Yeah.
Like, this is a month after month after month type of game,
mm-hmm.
whereas there have been other games that... Even something that... I don't think this is on either of our lists because we didn't play it yet, but, like, Prey... was like really hot for like a quick second there.
Yeah.
And then it fades away because 2017 is just an embarrassment of riches.
Mm-hmm.
But 2017 in many ways was the year of PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds.
Yeah,
like it just kept going.
Yeah.
All the streaming stuff that was around it.
Yeah,
the,
lots of streaming for sure.
The drama around the various mm-hmm. community kerfluffles. Yeah.
And the esports scene itself, like, blowing up and picking up. I watched a lot of hours of people playing PUBG.
Yeah.
Because it's also a very easy and quick to understand concept.
Yeah. I mean, I think it wasn't it the top game on Steam and or Twitch for like a good portion of the year.
Certainly for Steam, it was one of the most played games, and it surpassed Dota 2, I guess. Yeah.
I mean, it's kind of amazing what an impact that game had, and what that game's shadow will be really long.
Yeah, absolutely. And I should say, you know, I feel a little bad putting it on my list solely because I know how broken it is, you know, and I'm aware of, and now there's all these clones and even now, right? Like it's like getting frame rates at like 20 frames per second on the Xbox, right? Like I can see why this game is unfinished and maybe shouldn't be recognized as a complete game because it's clearly not a complete game yet. But at the same time, I feel like if I didn't have it on my list, I would be dismissing some of the most action-packed, like memorable moments from games that this year's provided at all.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a good argument for just revisiting what it even means for a game to be out. I mean, there are games that have come out that are significantly more busted than PUBG.
That's true.
So
that's
you know, it's like, what is the distinction anymore?
Yeah.
Cool.
All right.
Number two.
Yes.
Grab your hat.
Uh-oh.
Because it's Super Mario Odyssey time.
Okay.
Is that on the list? Is that on your list,
It's not on my list for you.
Oh, actually. Man. That's surprising.
I did not put Odyssey on the list for you.
All right. I was thinking about this game a lot, and then I realized that, this game is great. And I spent a huge amount of time playing it, and this was really where my Switch kind of, where I fell in love with my Switch.
Yeah.
AKA the true waifu of the year.
That is
my Nintendo Switch.
How do we not even nominate the Switch?
It's because it's become a part of my life that's so ingrained my day to day.
You forget. It's like when you're in a marriage for a really long time and you just sort of.
I'm sorry, I didn't appreciate you.
I didn't appreciate you. Yeah.
But I mean, it just becomes another piece of gear that I throw in my bag on the way out the door, the same way I would grab my phone or my headphones or my book or whatever. And I spent so much time getting hundreds of moons in that game. And I think that game, the more I think about it, though, the more what I admire most about that game is its willingness to engage with the concept of what Mario is in 2017.
Yes.
And the history of what Mario has been over the past 30 years.
Yep.
And I think it says some really smart stuff about just what it means to be a franchise. And I mean broadly. Like, in the same, like, I feel like Super Mario Odyssey succeeds where Star Wars The Force Awakens fails.
Oh, interesting. Well, it's funny because I was actually just thinking The Force Awakens
yeah.
in a more positive light than you were, but...
I mean, The Force Awakens was fine, but I felt really pandered to in The Force Awakens at all times.
Absolutely agreed. And to stay on this Force Awakens
stay on the old Star Wars.
Like, well, you know, Force Awakens, I think, had a... maybe an unfair obligation as a result of the prequels.
I think so, yeah.
To reignite the fire that is in the heart of Star Wars for a lot of fans.
Yeah.
And say what you will about Force Awakens, that is a very heavy burden.
Yeah.
Mario doesn't have that same burden because the franchise is already loved.
Yeah.
But it is speaking to the joyfulness that people find in that series.
Yeah.
And
speaking directly to, like, direct callbacks to what the series has been and what people think of as the series.
I mean, when you complete the game and you get access to the Mario 64 costume.
Yes.
And it looks so fucking good. Like, it looks straight out of Mario 64.
Yeah.
It's not just this, like, cute homage to the series. It's saying, like, there is a through line from Mario 64 to this. Yeah. Clearly, when you explore, especially
when you're in that last level where it's like, oh, I know exactly where Peach's castle is, and I know where this painting should be, and I know to look up at the ceiling because you'll get a star from that. Like,
oh, shit, I didn't do that.
Yeah, it works just the same as it did in 64, just the same way that, like, I mean, again, like, The Force Awakens, I think, is a fine movie, but there were definitely times where, like, there was times when, remember, you know, he like held up the droid to the camera and was like, what's this? And then threw it away. Yeah. And it's like, guys, I fucking get it. Like,
I think I have a better film metaphor, actually. I think it's kind of, it's more like Mad Max Fury Road.
Okay.
In the sense that like George Miller is an old dude.
That's,
like, this guy was out of the game.
Yeah.
He directed Happy Feet. Like, that film about dancing penguins.
That penguin that spray painted his own face and was like, witness.
Right. And so, like, to come out of... to come out of retirement and just say, like, oh, by the way, fuck all of y'all. Like, I still got it.
Yeah.
I'm going to make one of the coolest action films of the year, and it's going to be topical to our modern time, and it's going to be fresh and relevant. Like, that is the way that Mario Odyssey feels, I think, to play, especially as you're seeing the way that it's being playful with the iconography of the Mario franchise.
Yeah, I think that's a good... because it is calling back to something without being cloying and without being overly trite. It's also just inventive. I mean, they're willing to, like the best Mario games, they're willing to, every once in a while, they throw a mechanic in there and then never use it again. Because, we thought this would be a good idea for this level.
Yeah.
This is amazing. This could be an entire game. Nah, we'll just kind of, that was fun, right? We don't want it to overstay your welcome, so we're just going to not do it anymore.
Yeah.
I think the difficulty scales amazingly well.
Yep.
You can finish this game and have a great time and never struggle, or you can finish this game and have one of the more challenging sequences of the year under your belt.
Yeah.
I think it does some funny stuff with the characters and like the relationship with the characters.
Oh, yeah.
What happens to Bowser at the end and how Peach relates to Mario and Bowser.
Being Bowser. Like, yeah. That's so cool.
Yeah. I mean, it just does a lot of special things, and I think its structure in that quasi open world but also mission based fits really well with the system that it's on, where like you can grab a couple moons really quick and then you hit your stop on the subway and turn it off. It's just it's an extremely polished game.
It feels, I mean, I hate that term, like, instant classic,
but
it's pretty clearly an instant classic.
I mean, it's, and we talked about it a lot over the past month or so, but it's one of the, it's weird. It's like this magnificent homage, or it's this magnificent example of a genre that barely exists anymore.
Yeah. You know, I've been talking to some people lately as well, because at this point, the Switch has enough titles where it's becoming very compelling for people who don't already have a Switch and are thinking maybe they should get one. I have some coworkers, for example, who are like, oh, yeah, maybe I should get one. Is it worth it? You know, is Odyssey good? And it's like, yes, it's fucking great. Just get a Switch.
Go to the store right now.
If you can afford it, like, those games, that is a game that is worth it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, it's you're not only going to get an Odyssey, of course. Yeah. There's other great titles.
Yeah.
But Odyssey alone, I think, is absolutely worth investing into. And rather, it proves why this platform is as compelling as it is.
Yeah. It's a great game. And I've done most of it. I don't know if I'll ever finish the entire thing, just because there's a crazy amount of stuff in it. But
I think it's the type of game where I want to go back to it after taking a break, because I can rediscover those worlds and find new challenges and find new moons, right?
Yeah.
Like, it's not, I don't feel like I have to, you know, scrub every inch of it to get all of those, because I feel like at that point I really would be forcing spending time with it.
Mm. I also looked up what the fuck is up with all those rabbits.
Oh, yeah. Well, so, you can catch them.
I just mean, why are there so many fucking rabbits?
Oh, what is
in the
game? Reference to the rabbits? Yeah. Is it the rabbits?
No. Which is weird because in a year where Mario and rabbits crossed over, the mainline canonical Mario game also has a huge rabbits. Number of rabbits.
What is the deal with rabbits?
So in some cultures, Japan included, the man in the moon is a rabbit.
Oh,
They see a rabbit up there, and so
that's what we see. That's what I saw as a kid.
Well, I mean, for me, and I think for a lot of the Western world, there's a face in the moon.
Oh, okay.
Where, and then in other parts of the world, they see a rabbit, and sometimes the rabbit is like cooking
something. Oh, is that
why
they're from the moon?
And that's you like find that huge warren of rabbits when you go to the moon, and that's why the moon plays such a big part in that game, and that's why those fucking evil rabbits are from the moon.
That makes sense.
Because it's all of
the evil rabbits.
Yeah. It's all an extended moon metaphor for like. It'd be like if there was, you know, Martians on Mars or something.
Yeah.
There's rabbits on the moon.
That's copywritten by Warner Brothers.
Yeah. Anyway, so I was like, man, well, I learned cultural learnings.
Cultural
of Mario.
Learnings.
Thank you.
Thanks, Mario.
Thanks, Mario.
Mario Odyssey was by far the hardest one to decide where it would fall on my list.
Yeah.
The answer is it's not on my list.
Oh.
At all.
Oh, no.
Sorry, Cappy. We'll talk a little bit later about why. Mm. My number two game of the year is Hellblade.
Nailed it!
Sacrifice, did you?
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
You can't put it into words. That moment when you look into the eyes of the one who is supposed to reassure you, make you feel safe. It only takes an instant. Fear swallows you before you have a chance to make sense of it. And darkness becomes a part of who you are.
I really enjoyed Hellblade.
This was a good game.
So I actually thought this would be on your list above Nier, is what I was thinking of going back on.
Those were the two that I was,
oh, really?
I was vacillating back and forth, yeah.
This is the year where there's a few more games in the sort of AA category than I would have expected.
Mm-hmm.
Things that feel really polished, that feel like they are labors of love, that ask just enough of your time before you get tired of them.
Yeah.
And I remember thinking back to first experiencing some of these things that, whatever, I don't know if I like that term AA, but if we roll with it, right? Like.
Yeah.
Infamous First Light, right? I remember loving the hell out of that game.
Yeah.
Or even the DLC to some extent to...
Uncharted?
Yeah, not Uncharted. The
Dishonored.
Clickers.
Clickers.
From Naughty Dog.
Oh!
The Last of Us.
Clickers. The Naughty Dog Clickers. Clickers.
Naughty Dog Clickers. Yeah. The Last of Us DLC, which is also its own self-contained miniature story.
Yeah.
These experiences almost are more similar to me in a way to some of the walking simulators we talk about, or even like the Walking Dead Telltale narrative games.
Yep.
Because they're short, they can have the tight, singular narrative arc and punchiness that something like a short film might have, because you are not bogged down by having to come up with excuses for keeping people playing, right? Like, you move from moment to moment to moment in these games. And Hellblade, I think, has some of the best pacing of any narrative game this year.
Yeah.
Even in the beginning where you're deciding like which route to go, the route that you take will color your opinion of the other one.
Mm-hmm.
The FMV stuff that I hated on last week, I still think is some of the most daring, interesting stuff a game has done this year.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't play Divinity Original Sin 2. I know a lot of people were talking about that game on their list because of some of these similar reasons of like really strong writing, a really tight focus. Hellblade was that game for me. And I think it's absolutely one of the stars of the year. And even after we played it the first time, I was thinking since then, this would probably be my number two game of the year.
Yeah. I mean, I think those examples, and I think Hellblade is the prime example of the term like interactive story or interactive fiction calls to mind. Well, I'm just going to be clicking through a menu most of the time.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I think really an interactive story is more about the scope of the story that you're talking about. Whereas sometimes the Uncharted games get in trouble because they try to stretch out this crazy story over 20 hours, and it's like, okay, I get it. You know, like this would have worked really well in a 3-hour chunk, but now it just feels contrived. And Hellblade was able to sidestep all of that by just being about Senua's story, just being about whatever, 5 hours or whatever it was, and not having to, it didn't feel like there was a lot of concessions to gaminess.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah, it was not a game.
It wasn't a gamey game. It wasn't even in the running for it. Yeah. And I think that's to its credit. You know, it pulled off what it set out to do.
And in a weird way, it actually does have similarities to Odyssey in that there are certain segments, like the segment when she has a flashback where she's blind and she's being walked through this experience by like her partner, which provides a ton of backstory and color to Senua's and that, I forget his name, but that guy's relationship, which is the foundation of what the entire story is. And it does it in this like stealth level where you can't really see anything.
Yeah.
They could have done that more than once. They could have had multiple segments of that. That scene could have been longer, but it's not. It's pretty restrained.
Yeah.
And intelligently so.
Yeah. What was the, I forget which part of, Viking mythology it was, but when you had to fight the wolf in the darkness.
Yes. That was great. And the sound would like adjust. Yeah. I mean, again, and even the way
mixed like, FMV into that fight. Yeah.
The like the professionalism and the, I mean, again, it's a game that executed almost perfectly on the constraints that it sought.
Yeah.
Right. Like the sound being key was clearly woven in from the very beginning. And it's a fundamental part of that experience. The voice acting is superb. The visual effects, you had strongly pushed for it for prettiest game of the year, which I think is absolutely warranted for a nomination for that reason.
You put on one feathered headdress and all of a sudden...
I know, all of a sudden. One FMV sequence and you're out of the running. I mean, it's a beautiful game.
Yeah.
And
that's also, I think, thanks to the scope where like you couldn't sustain 20 different levels of art assets at that fidelity if we were
gonna... Or like a ton of different actors getting all mocap for 3D graphics. Exactly right. And it was also a game that took me by surprise because they didn't really know about it going into it other than this is a game you should play.
We should have had a gamies category of worst title for best game.
That's a very good point, because Hellblade is a real garbage title.
Yeah, it's just like so generic and boring. It sounds like a gamey-ass video game, but it's actually completely
unique. What else
would
you nominate? Out of curiosity.
I don't know. There's some stuff out there probably.
That's probably true.
Like that one that you like Divinity something something or other.
Yeah,
like
Original Sin.
I have no clue. Like if you were telling me that for the first time, it's like I have no clue what this game even is.
That's true. Yeah. I think even Wolfenstein 2 maybe. I don't
know. Maybe. Next year.
Anyway. Next year. Hellblade, excellent game. If I could get more people to play that, I gladly would.
I would also recommend, I talked about this on our debrief, but I would also recommend watching the making of featurette because they talk about going, they talk about their partnership with the mental health nonprofit that they worked with and visiting people who were recovering from psychotic episodes and like involving them in the feedback and development cycle of that game.
Real.
And it was fucking fascinating.
Wow. Where is that on YouTube?
I think it's actually in one of the menus. Like you have to dig for it a little bit, but like if you boot up, I'm sure they put it on their YouTube channel too, but if you boot up the game, you can see like the making of featurette and they, I think they treated the source material pretty respectfully in the game, and it showed because they actually talked to real people.
Yeah.
So lo and behold, you can be respectful by talking to actual people.
Go figure.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's my number three, number two. Okay. You said you're number three, number two.
Yeah.
I strongly suspect number one's exactly the same game. Do you want to just say it at the exact same time?
Yeah, 3-2-1 game?
3-2-1 game.
Okay. 3-2-1 game. Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild. Okay, boom. Yeah. Goodbye, everyone.
Bye.
See you next year.
Yeah. Thanks, everybody.
Oh, what a fucking game this was, huh?
Wake up, Link.
What a game.
What a game. So, what a game.
When I was thinking about what would be in my list, For a good long while.
By the way, I nailed all three of your picks.
You did. You're very good. Yeah. Get out of my mind, Scott! So this year, I was strongly thinking about cheating even more by naming both Mario Odyssey and Breath of the Wild as my number one. And I decided, I was like, okay, in the spirit of the contest.
Yeah. What the fuck do you think this is? Ready Player One? Yeah. This isn't the fucking, like...
Also,
Overwatch.
Ninja Turtles.
Yeah.
God, that movie. Yeah. The reason, because I had... Odyssey was fresh in my mind, right? And there was, like, a joyfulness to Odyssey. Yeah. And I was like, you know, I was enamored. It was it was the summer love, right? It was like summer camp, right?
Yeah.
And I think I was watching a video. I was watching videos on YouTube. And one of the recommended videos was someone playing Breath of the Wild. And they were like... I remember clicking play because I was already thinking about, do I put Breath of the Wild on the list? And the video starts with them going, okay, let's do this. And then a huge rock falls out of the sky from a magnet, hits a beam, and then Link's on the other side, and he just goes, like, flying over Moe's. And then I was like, I forgot how absolutely ridiculous and, all of the things that I love about Odyssey are also in Breath of the Wild.
Yeah.
And I felt bad because I felt like I had forgotten that, you know? And so I ended up dropping Odyssey off the list. Mostly because I feel like Breath of the Wild covers that, and it felt weird giving two games to Nintendo.
Yeah.
Also because I think so much of Odyssey does pay homage to those older titles, and I wanted to recognize two titles that were new.
I would say Odyssey has a... probably an unparalleled level of polish, but within the guidelines of a very known thing.
Yeah. I mean, Odyssey would be absolutely my number four game.
Yeah.
But Breath of the Wild, thinking back, like triggered by this just hilarious, inane, systems-based humor piece, essentially, reminded me of just all the crazy things that I did and discovered in Breath of the Wild that set it apart, I think, above anything else.
I mean, it's wild that Nintendo essentially made Far Cry 2.
Yeah. Yeah.
In the Zelda universe.
Well, better than Far Cry 2 is really punishing.
Yeah, but I mean, the systems driven, you know, I accidentally set this on fire, which exploded my Jeep, which did this, which set off an alarm. Like, that stuff is all around Zelda, and it's the last game... was terrible. Like, the last Zelda game was just bad.
Was that not Twilight Princess?
That was Skyward Sword.
Oh, okay.
Except for the last dungeon was amazing. Mm-hmm. But the rest of that game was just not a good game. And it handheld you all the way. Like, every time you picked up a rupee, you had to click through a menu because it was telling you what that rupee was.
Yeah.
And it's like, fuck off, game.
Yeah.
And now they swung the total opposite direction where I'm subscribed...
We won't tell you anything.
...to the Nintendo Switch Zelda channel, and every once in a while they give you tips and tricks, and I'm still learning things about that game. Where it's like, that's how you make that dish? I didn't even know that was a thing. I didn't even know you could
do that.
Like a
food dish.
Yeah. Or like, you can polish rusty swords so that they are now regular swords.
How do you do that?
So, you know those Octoroks that suck in rocks?
You just throw in the sword?
You throw in, and then the thing that spits out is a shiny sword.
Because
he sucks
cool.
the rust off of it. And it's like, how would I have known that?
That's great.
And so, I mean, there's so much stuff in that game that is hidden just for you to find.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
From a systemic perspective, to say nothing of the map itself.
Yeah. Which, in my game, is still heavily Uncharted.
Yeah. I mean, we spent 3+ podcasts talking about the game, and I'm still not convinced I've seen every area of that map.
And the series of debriefs that we did, when I was thinking back on them as well, one of the reasons it reminded me why this deserved to be number one was that even though you and I were having shared experiences, because that is the nature of the game, this game accomplishes what so many open world games wish they could accomplish, which is to create these recognizable, iconic moments such that it's a shared experience, but that also have all of these unique, purely subjective experiences that separates the experience between players. So what I experienced and what you experienced was totally different, partially because I went to different parts of the world than you did at different moments. Other parts because for some reason you were filthy rich in these fucking games and had like crazy weapons.
Yeah.
So every time we would describe like taking down a boss or taking down like the horse things, you'd be like, oh, I just like threw an axe at it or whatever. And I'm like, I had to fight tooth and nail, like climbing on top of this fucking thing over like 45 minutes. Like, and it's not to say that your way is better than mine. It probably is. But like,
it's just how we arrived at that.
Yeah. And what those moments, like why those moments stood out, right? Yeah. Like, the discovery of that first island where they make you lose everything.
Yes.
And how you basically figured out a way to solve the puzzle and you really worked on it. And my solution was take all my shit and throw it off the boat to give myself a competitive advantage once I was on the island. It's such a stupid thing that's kind of exploitative, but at the same time, like...
It works within the system.
Yeah, it works within the system. I had an amazing time. It was a blast. I still died numerous times on the island, far more than you did.
That fucking Eventide Island, I remember because when I was on that island and had cleared out so much of the island... I all of a sudden see a red tinge in the distance, and it's a fucking blood moon. Ugh. And then all the guys come back.
That's like, crazy. Yeah, the blood moon moments. That's awesome. Or like, you know, the first moment, and it's not, this is one of many moments, right? And again, to that idea of like deception in games this year, but there are moments where you think, I've understood or I've seen what this game has to offer. Yeah. And then you crest a hill and you see your first maze and it looks like this black foreboding monolith.
Yeah.
And you have to move around in an environment you haven't seen before.
Yeah.
You know, like that's really cool.
There are moments that reminded me of watching like the first three seasons of Lost.
Yes.
Where all of a sudden you would like crest a hill and you're like, what is this? Like what? Like where did this maze come from? Or like when you climb up a mountain and you see a huge statue just tilted over with an immense sword poking out of it. And it's like, where did this fucking statue come from?
Or when you were first telling me like, oh, those meteors land.
Yeah.
And you're like, what? Yeah. Like it just blew my mind. Because, you know, I had seen streaks across the sky, but I'd never put two and two together.
Yeah. Or, you know, you might be walking around and all of a sudden you hear some like jingle jangling and all of a sudden there's a fucking dragon flying around behind you.
Yeah.
But nothing. It's like, you, I don't know. It's just it captures very artfully the sense of discovery that a really good video game can do. And that Legend of Zelda, when it's firing on all cylinders, does probably better than almost any other game out there.
Yeah.
It's just an incredible game. It's hard to believe that what they pulled off.
The one thing that I wish I had was a copy of the game on the Switch.
I was thinking about that.
And it's funny because when we talked about it on the Wii U, this was before we had the Switch. And it was like, I mean, the game plays great on the Wii U.
Yeah.
It looks fantastic. Yeah. I loved it. But I might end up buying the game again.
I was thinking about that same thing. And I've also bought the DLC.
So have I,
So this is a fucking $80 investment.
Yeah.
And Nintendo games don't fall in price. Yeah. So it's going to be that forever.
But I mean, again, like playing on the go, like having those moments of discovery, being able to stop and pause and like chew on solving a puzzle.
Yeah.
And maybe not now because there are quite a few games, but you know, come spring or summer when there's a lull, having a game like Breath of the Wild, to me, which feels like it never will really get old, like, that's up there with Stardew Valley in infinite playability, I think. It seems like the perfect game to have on the Switch.
It seems like it's one of those things where, you know, I read Lord of the Rings every 5 to 10 years or so.
Yeah.
And I could see myself... I mean, it's an investment to play this game, but...
It's an investment to read Lord of the Rings again.
But I mean, at least, like, and that's why I only do it every so often, but I could see myself like, okay, you know, this is it. I haven't played this game for a long time, and I want to rediscover this and just see that world again.
Yeah.
I think it will also... It's one of those games that I think you alluded to this, kind of like PUBG, that will influence games for a while.
Yeah.
This is going to be one of those things where... This will be on many people's inspiration lists when they, you know, go off and do their thing.
Yeah, and it's already on a lot of Game of the Year lists.
Yeah,
for sure. And what's funny is, I'm pretty sure everyone called it the moment they first started playing Breath of the Wild. Because I'm sure, like, when we were playing Breath, it's like, oh, yeah, this is probably going to be the best game of the year, and it's February.
Yeah, I mean, it's 2017, I think, had multiple games where this isn't just a good game for this year. This is just a good game, period, for the medium. And I think there's multiple of those games that came out this year, and Zelda being one of the top ones, where it's... We'll be talking about this game in the same way that we talk about Shadow of the Colossus.
Yeah.
And it's just immediately entered the pantheon.
Well, and even how we measure open world games.
Exactly.
Which is really unfortunate for anyone working on an open world game.
I mean, can you imagine the fucking, years? like, is the Red Dead team like, fuck.
Well, I guess we got to put some of these weird aliens in there, I guess, right? I mean, bird people.
They've been wanting Sasquatches.
No one can prove they weren't in the American Midwest in the 19th century.
I mean, it is one of those things where perhaps it's so out there that you're okay just kind of ignoring it. Where it's like, it kind of transcends what an open world game even is. But yeah, it's a tough thing to compare anything to.
Yeah. How do you feel having two Nintendo games being your number one and number two pick of the
game? I mean, it just solidifies my fanboy status anyway. Like, if anyone had any...
It's crazy, though, right? Like, it was only a year ago people were talking about, man, what is the deal with Nintendo? What are they doing?
But, I mean, it's kind of... It's a bummer because I feel like Nintendo was a victim of its own poor hardware decisions. Because if you think back to the Wii U... We had some great fucking times with the Wii U. They were few and far between because they made some bad decisions about third-party support and, like, just, I think the hardware in general had some drawbacks. But Splatoon, Mario Maker, we played Zelda on the Wii U. Mm-hmm. I mean, my main criticism of Zelda is that it would have been a better Wii U game had it not been hamstrung by having to be also ported to the Switch, because you could have used that second screen for real item management.
Yeah.
And so... I mean, I think Pikmin 3 was a great game.
Silent Hill Shattered Memories.
That was a Wii.
Oh, you're right. Yeah, sorry. Yeah.
But I mean, I think people were like, oh man, Nintendo's down and out. But it's like the games never got bad. It was the hardware that they made a mistake with.
Yeah.
And now here they are again.
Yeah. I was reading an article about Nintendo, their success being attributed to the fact that they always bet on themselves.
Yeah.
Like, they always have a faith in their ability to deliver on what makes their game special.
Yeah.
And it was fine. It's weird to ever really say, like, this corporation is really good at X. Because it's this weird personification of like an entity.
Yeah.
But it's hard not to talk about them in that way when you have these two games that stand out in a year where there's already so many great games that, you know, if these didn't make the list, no foul, you know, like these could have still been very good games and not been in a lot of people's top 10 lists because the games this year were that good.
Yeah.
To have them be that stellar and to have them both solidify like what makes them special and unique and really sort of put to shame a lot of the competitors. It's pretty remarkable, and it's really difficult not to talk about Nintendo as an entity when they've proven themselves in that way. And you know, Splatoon 2 is on there, and there's a lot of other Nintendo games and games coming out for this. I mean, the Switch hardware itself, some of the indie games that are available on it already, like there's just, they've done a really good job of proving themselves this year, which was the year they needed to prove themselves in the at all, you know.
I think I was so I've ever since we started talking about it this on the podcast, I was thinking about the Star Wars connection also, because Star Wars is kind of on my brain right now. But
did you see The Last Jedi yet?
Not yet. I gotta do that. But
Cappy's in it.
Oh man, if only Cappy could possess Kylo Ren.
Yeah, Kylo Ren takes off his helmet and it's like, oh my god,
instead of the scar there's a mustache. I think, again, Nintendo has avoided the trap that Star Wars has fallen into, in that Star Wars movies are still pretty, like, they're technically outstanding, they are fun to watch, but the original, like, A New Hope, Empire, Jedi, did something to the movie medium.
Yeah.
And the current Star Wars movies, in my opinion, don't really advance the medium.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas... it's crazy that a company which, you know, Nintendo and the first Star Wars are roughly in the same era of like Super Mario Brothers and Star Wars. Nintendo, all these years later, is still fundamentally shaping the artistic medium not just being extremely successful within the boundaries of
it. Yeah,
yeah. Whereas I feel like Star Wars has kind of receded from pushing the boundaries of cinema.
Yeah.
It's still an amazing movie.
Two points to that. One is, I'm really interested in, to hear what you think about The Last Jedi.
I've heard some things, and I want to see it, but like, I'm interested.
But two, I think that's a really good point. And I think, I mean, if we're going to continue this comparison to film, I know everybody loves that. I think Pixar might actually be a pretty good example because they are a studio that, you know, really made a splash with the sort of main core John Lasseter helmed films that everybody knows and loves, and Toy Story and whatnot. But, you know, you go see Coco and you're like, fuck, these guys still got it. Like, this is still a team of people that put in incredible work and still really define what it means to make excellent 3D animation in a way that is entertaining to children and smart and emotional and reaches those audiences. Yeah. And the ability to stay both relevant and fresh and skilled, like it's not a skill a lot of companies or even individuals have.
Yeah. It's hard to sustain, because I would argue the same thing happened with with Marvel. Like, the Iron Man kind of changed the way that big action movies are done. But now we're entering a part where, like, okay, well, maybe they're now just firing on all cylinders within a known set of boundaries. And what's going to be the next thing to basically expand the boundaries?
Right.
And I feel like that's one of the most impressive things about Nintendo, especially this year, which is they are still, some 30, almost 40 years later, able to push the boundaries of the medium while also operating super effectively within the boundaries that they themselves kind of created. And that's, to me, that's why Zelda is such an amazing game, where it's like, wow, you actually not only made a great Zelda game, but you changed the way that people should think about video games.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's also a good year to be someone who is passionate about games because there's so many examples, and not just examples, where you could point to someone who doesn't play games and be proud of, like, look at the ingenuity on display. There is a title that is excellent that you can give to almost anyone of almost any age and say, check this out. I think you're going to have a really good time.
Any interest, any genre familiarity. Yeah, it's strong.
Dating sim horror games all the way up to, like, you know.
Esports.
Yeah.
Oh, this was a good year.
T'was a good year.
I feel like the next conversation will be just as interesting, because so much stuff is just under the water on my list.
Yeah. And there are some games that literally, like, there's a game that I'm going to talk about next week that I played 2 days ago.
Yeah.
And is already something that's super interesting and well worth people's attention as we talk about the leftovers of the year.
Yeah. Cool. Well, thank you everyone for listening. I'm going to go play some Breath of the Wild now.
I'm going to bite on the Switch is the problem.
Yeah, I'm going to start over. ExperiencePoints@gmail.com is our email address.
And ExperiencePoints.net is our website. Let us know what your games of the year list is. Yeah. Send us an email, leave us a comment, find us on Twitter, do your thing, whatever.
Yep.
Come on by, do us a favor at the end of the year. We want your New Year's resolution to tell your friends about the Experience Points podcast.
Spread that word. All right, everyone. Thank you so much for listening. We'll be talking to you next week.
Ciao.
There's a place you go to.